This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM. This is Erev Shabbos, late afternoon show, Rabbi Moshe Schnurb on your radio. As again, Baruch Hashem Shechiyonu V'Kiyumonu V'Yonu, we're zeichet to approach another beautiful, beautiful Shabbos, this time the first of the Shabbosos of the 3 weeks of mourning. I hope you had an easy and significant fast of Tammuz yesterday, and now we're ready for another beautiful, beautiful Shabbos. As always, the program is brought to you by as a Refuah Shleima for those who might need a Yeshua from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just to mention a few of the names locally: Shmuel Chaim ben Ella Devora, Yishai ben Devora Leah, Omri ben Einat, and Yehudi Hillel ben Shulamis Leah, as well as Tzivia bas Malka, Yehudis Brocha bas Rochel, Esther bas Tzipora, Devora Yocha bas Nira, Beseich Shar Choli Yisrael Meitaku Yibizeiche, that anyone and everyone who needs a Yeshua from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who needs some kind of extra help, some extra Siyata Deshmaya, a push along the way towards health or success or happiness or whatever it is that a person might need, may it be that in the Zuchus of all of us coming together late on a Friday afternoon, just as we're about to go on the transition from weekday to Shabbos, such amazing, amazing, special time of the week. May that be a special, special merit for all those that they should be zecher to a refuah shleima or shiduchim or children, whatever it is that people need in the schus of HaTorah, it should do tremendous, tremendous things in Shemayim. I want to spend a bit of time this week discussing an incident, which of course is the actual incident is described in the parsha we read last week, and it carries on, and we're given the reward that is given to the man who performed this feat, Pinchas ben Elazar and Aaron HaKohen. The reward is given this week, but I want to discuss a little bit just to understand what this was all about. What was actually the act that this man, Zimri was a prominent leader of the Jewish nation. He was a Nasi, he was one of the leaders of the tribes. What was he thinking? What was he doing? And what is the practical learning that we take from it, which of course then that will help us to understand a bit of what the reward was that Pinchas got, what he actually achieved and did for the Jewish nation. So that's what I want to do. I hope Siyata Deshmaya, hopefully we'll be able to get a little bit of clarity together. And again, you'll have something to take home, something to share at your Shabbos table, something to mull and think over as we go through another beautiful, beautiful Shabbos. So the incident, as related in last week's Parsha talk, says, Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Pinchas was the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKohen, saw what was going on, a terrible act of breach that was taking place. The Zimri brought a Midianite woman into the camp and was acting with her in a totally immoral way, and therefore Vayakom mitoch ha'eda, he rose up from amongst the community, Vayikach ha'roimach biyodoi, and he took a spear in his hand, and he killed them both. Now this whole discussion of the act of zealousness of Pinchas, who was the son of Elazar, who was the son of Aaron HaKohen, so this is an entree into a very, very unique discussion, and that is the act of almost a militancy, an act of tremendous, tremendous bravery and zealousness, almost vigilanteism, one might say, for the sake of Shemayim, for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is then, we have to take from here some kind of a direction for all generations of how to handle such a subject. And because of that, so even the very mention, the way the Torah presents this whole story needs to be learnt and to be understood. And please God, we're going to do that right after the break. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show. My name is Rabbi Moshe Shlurb. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Shnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show with Rabbi Moshe Shnurb. We are discussing, just starting to get into, the concept of the great act of bravery, the great act of zealousness that was performed by Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKohen. And it's interesting, first, at the very, very foremost, where we only mention Pinchas was the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron. Why didn't we go further back? Aaron was the son of Amram. Amram was the son of Kehas. Kehas was the son of Levi. And of course, then go all the way back to Yaakov. It seems to almost truncate the process and not mention all the way back. It just goes as far as Zayda, Aaron HaKohen. Why wouldn't it go back all the way to Levi and to Yaakov itself? Now, in this week's Parsha, in Parshas Pinchas, the commentaries there give a reason. In fact, if one looks in the Sifsei Chachamim, in his commentary, in the super commentary on Rashi, he says that since, and Rashi explains this, that the other tribes were making fun of Pinchas. How could he go and kill a prince from the tribes of Israel, because in his own family, right? Because Pinchas, while he came from Elazar and Aaron on his father's side, the Torah tells us that he married one of the daughters of Yisro on his mother's side. Yisro was a man who at certain stages of his life was completely and totally involved in every sort of brand and type of idol worship of Avodah Zarah you could have imagined in the world. And the Shvatim raised the eyebrows and says, huh, how can a guy like that with such a relationship, with such a family, the kind of person that takes up the cudgels and goes to war against the prince of the Jewish nation? And therefore the Torah has to come and tell us specifically, no. Okay, leave alone the mother's side. But on his father's side, he goes all the way back to Aaron to teach us that in the same way, as we learned in Parshas Korach, that subsequent to the rebellion of Korach, when there was a plague that was going on against the Jewish nation, who were basically on a certain level rebelling against the rulership of Moshe Rabbeinu, that Aaron was able to arrest and stop that plague, right, at the time of this whole fight with Korach, by bringing the Ketores, by bringing the incense, as the Torah relates in chapter 17, Psukim Yud Beis and Yud Gimel. So too, Pinchas had that within him. His Pinchas was the Enochel, was the grandson of Aaron. He too was able to stop a terrible, terrible plague that was taking place in the Jewish nation, right? Well, when many thousands of 24,000 Jews were killed in this plague, and he was able to stop the plague by killing Zimri, the prince of the tribe of Shimon. So we see already a relationship that existed between the Zayda, between the grandfather Aaron and his grandson Pinchas. But that really doesn't necessarily, it's not an appropriate reason to explain why the Torah doesn't mention the earlier generations, right? Why doesn't it mention earlier generations in discussing what actually happened in Parshas Balak? And it just comes to express the act of this tremendous zealousness itself. And therefore, we need to understand what is the reason behind it, that the Torah does not actually go on to list Pinchas's roots all the way back to Levi and Yaakov. In fact, on the contrary, we see by the argument against Korach, so Yaakov Avinu davened, please, I don't want my name mentioned in the Seidam al Tavoy Nafshi. He especially prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when Korach is listed. So it says, Ben Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Amram, Ben Levi. Yes, it went back to Levi, but it doesn't mention Yaakov, because Yaakov specially davened not to have his name mentioned. So here, on the contrary, this was not going to be something that would have embarrassed Yaakov. This was going to be a tremendous honor for Yaakov to mention his name together with a huge, important act of Pinchas. How come the Torah saw fit to leave it out? So the sort of the deep understanding of this whole matter is we have to go back all the way to the root, and even here, the it's hard to sort of get to the very, very bottom of this whole story. And in order to do so, we first have to probe a little bit into this act of zealousness that actually came before the act of Pinchas, and go all the way back to Sefer Breshit, and discuss a little bit about the story of Shechem and Dinah, which is described in Parshas Vayishlach. We know that Shechem, this Chivi prince, went and kidnapped Dinah, the daughter of Leah, kidnapped her and was intimate with her. So Shimon and Levi, her two brothers, again took up the cudgels of zealotry, and with the whole trick, they got the whole town to perform a bris milah under the ruse and guise that they were going to make peace with them and join together. And then at a time when they were all weakened by the bris and they were in pain, they came and they killed the entire a city, Shechem and his father, and the entire city, and after they had this bris. Now the Ramban there, you want to see it inside, it's in chapter 36, verse Yud Gimel. He brings that Rabim Yishalu, many people are going to ask a question: how could the sons of Yaakov, who were such great tzaddikim, how could they have done this act to go and spill innocent blood? Okay, maybe the man who kidnapped her and raped her was deserving of death. But why did the whole town deserve to be put to death? And the Rambam answers that question in Sefer Shoftim, the Laws of Malachim, he brings there. And he says that Bnei Noach, people who are not Jews, are commanded to set up a system of justice. And that was, you know, to set up a court, to set up a judicial review system in every single town, every single city, to at least adjudicate any matters regarding the mitzvahs that they were required to keep, the seven Noachad mitzvahs that they are required to keep. And we know that a Ben Noach who violates any one of his seven mitzvahs is actually liable to be killed by the sword, right? And if they see someone who violated any one of the mitzvahs, and they didn't convene, let's say, a trial to judge that person, so then it's incumbent upon anyone who sees that act or sees that person to actually kill him with a sword. And that's why the Rambam explains why all the people in the Shechem were actually liable to kill, because Shechem kidnapped the woman, and everybody saw it, and they knew exactly what happened, and no one stood up and took him to trial. He needed to be tried and perhaps given capital punishment for what he did. Right? That's how he quotes the Rambam. However, the Ramban says, I don't agree with this. Right? Because if so, then Yaakov Avinu should have been the one who went away, who went straight ahead, and he should have gone and killed him. As soon as the Torah says that Yaakov heard what was going on, and he remained silent. If this was true, that he had to stand up and make justice, he should have done it right away. And if he was afraid of them, so why did he get angry at his children afterwards and curse them for their anger later on? What they did was 100% justified. And why did he go and he went and he scattered them amongst the Jewish nation? They did the right thing. Very good question. Please, God, we're going to come back and discuss it after the break. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is the late afternoon air of Shabbos. So my name is Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon, Friday afternoon show. My name is Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. We are discussing the story of Pinchas and his act of zealousness, and going a little further back in order to get to the root of the problem, and discussing a bit about the whole incident of Shechem and Dina. We're also getting the question, why didn't Yaakov Avinu himself, if in fact the man, the perpetrator of this crime against one of the children of Yaakov, was deserving of death, Yaakov himself should have done it. And if he didn't want to do it himself, why do we see that he gets angry at Shimon and Levi, who are the ones that actually did go and perpetrate? So the Ramban quoted the Rambam, but then he doesn't like his answer, and he himself gives another answer. He says that in fact, all the people who lived in Shechem, they all served idols, and they all were guilty of immorality, and they all actually deserved to die. But the people responsible for that were not necessarily the sons of Yaakov. They did not necessarily have the commandment, the mitzvah, to kill them all. This wasn't really their fight, since they hadn't harmed them at all. So the Ramban says that was considered for them to be a sin. And even more than this, they did it as a whole trick, as a whole ruse. They asked them to have a bris milah, a circumcision, all the males under the guise that they would then become friendly and create some kind of a unity government and commercial union. And they attacked them while they were still sitting in pain because of the bris milah. And that's why Yaakov got upset at them, and he said to them, no, klei chomos. This is an act of corruption, not an act of correct behavior. He goes on to add that even the actual killing of Shechem ben Hamor himself, who was the criminal who had actually done a heinous crime by kidnapping and taking Dina, even killing him was not correct, because in spite of the fact that certainly he was liable to be put to
to death based on the laws of a Ben Noach who get killed for something like kidnapping or stealing. Nevertheless, when they came to him and they said, well, let's do a deal. If you do a bris milah, if you do a circumcision, so then you'll be able to accept Dina as a wife. So then they had no right to then go against their previous words and to use that as an excuse to do this mitzvah, because you know, in spite of the fact we have this covenant with Hashem, which is the bris milah, something holy and special that's meant to be done for Jews, to use something as sublime and as special as that as a ruse and an excuse to then kill the whole nation in such a devious way. And that created a chil Hashem, that created a desecration of God's name amongst the nations. Now, if we think about for a moment the act of Shimon and Levi, each one, you know, by itself, so what Shimon did seems to have been even more severe, because he was the one that actually it was this whole thing, this whole clever ruse was his idea, and as the older brother, he kind of joined Levi to help him. And even if we see later on, at the time when Yosef was sold, much later in Parshat Vayeshev, so it says Vayomru ish el achiv, right? When one brother said to his another, oh, here comes hine balach alemis, here comes the dreamer boy. Let's go, v'atal l'chuvin hargeyu. Let's go and kill him and throw him one in the pits. So Chazal tell us there that who was Ish, who was saying to his brother, this was again Shimon, that he was speaking to his brother Levi. And because of that, even Yosef, when the brothers came down to him to buy food, and he needed to take one of them and separate him from the others and so to speak, put him in jail, the one he chose was specifically Shimon, as the Pesukim say, that Rashi explains it, that he needed to separate Shimon and Levi, and he took Shimon and put him in jail. Now, we know that the judgments of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are always righteous, they're always correct, and it's actually one consistent discussion that goes through the life of Shimon and continues through to Zimri, who was the prince of the tribe of Shimon, and the two are connected one to another. In order to truly understand it, let's introduce the holy words of the Arizal and the Rambam Ippano in his Sefer Asara Mamoris, that he says in his he has a mimer called Aim Kol Chai, that and it's also brought in the Yalkut Aruveni, and he says that after the people of Shechem were killed by the so-called act of zealousness of Shimon, that, as we said, was inappropriate and incorrect because it was done after they kind of tricked the whole nation to having a bris milah. So the souls of all these people that have been murdered came in front of the heavenly court with a very, very strong complaint and demanded some kind of justice against the perpetrators. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who basically agreed with their arguments, returned the soul of Shechem to this world in the body of Zimri, the prince of the tribe of Shimon, who also was called, has another name, Shaul ben Hakananis, as if to say, this is the so-called the son that was born to Shimon from his marriage with Dina, who had relations with this Kanani, with this non-Jew. Because the Major says elsewhere that the only way Shimon was able to convince Dina to actually leave Shechem's house was by promising to actually marry her. And this is what happened later, therefore, to the neshama of Shechem. And into the body of this woman whom Zimri committed the act with, this Cosby Bastur, so into that body was introduced the neshama of Dina, the daughter of Yaakov. And said it's possible that this was through a pregnancy, in other words, that to the neshama of Zimri was actually added a portion of the neshama of Shechem, and to the neshama of Cosby was added a portion of the neshama of Dina. And this was the reason why Zimri ben Soli, the prince of the tribe of Benjamin, had this tremendous desire for this particular woman, Cosby, who was the daughter of a Midianite princess, because this was already a continuation of the act of the intimacy, of the forbidden intimacy that already had existed in their previous lifetime on one side. And in addition to that, there was also this tremendous, tremendous, strong desire to do something today, to take some kind of a revenge against the children, against the descendants of Shimon that had caused their death. And therefore, because of this, specifically, 24,000 members of the tribe of Shimon died in that plague, because this was a kind of a tikkun, a rectification of the sin of Shimon, their father, who also killed, at the end of the day, he killed 24,000 members of the city of the Shechem. And we find a similar kind of thing by Shaul, that seven of his descendants died, again as a tikkun for the seven of the Givonim that died when he killed Noiv Ir Akainim, and didn't allow them to, they couldn't get Parnassa. So therefore, what comes out is that after that Shimon acted inappropriately when he killed 24,000 people of the city of Shechem, after they already had a bris milah, therefore he was punished in Shemayim, or we say midah keneged midah, quid pro quo, and 24,000 from his descendants were also killed. And the same way as he killed unjustly, he killed Shechem after he had a bris milah, so too were killed his son Shaul, that the neshama of Shechem was deliberately placed into him in order to cause him to sin in this immoral way. And as an outcome of that, so he would die appropriately by the sword of Pinchas as a payback for the fact that his father Shimon had killed him illegitimately, not according to the halacha. So based on all this, now we can understand how come we don't want to mention the name of Levi and Yaakov together with the name of Pinchas. That's what we asked at the beginning, because that Levi, who joined Shimon in his act of zealousness against Shechem, right, when he sort of participated together with Shimon, his brother, so he also was acting inappropriately. And they went and they killed the family of Shechem after they already had a bris, and that was immoral, that was incorrect to do. So it comes out that his act of zealousness was actually an act of murder, which was being done in direct opposition to the halacha. And this is exactly the opposite of the way his descendant Pinchas acted, with tremendous gevurah, tremendous strength of Hashem, and he took an act of zealousness for the Shem Shemayim, a totally correct act, right? Because the halacha says that if someone, haboyel aramis, if someone has a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, kanoim poigim boy, people who are truly moved by the outrage and the chilul Hashem that's being caused have a right to go and kill them. And that's why he killed Zimri and Cosby, and created a tremendous Kiddush Hashem, a tremendous sanctification of God's name in what he did. In other words, Pinchas, on the contrary, he put his life in danger in order to fulfill the proper halacha. So therefore, it comes out that all the murder that was done by the Zayda Levi, who was part of Shimon in this situation, was against halacha, and the killing of by the grandson Pinchas was absolutely mesirish nefesh, was totally dedicated on the highest level to fulfilling the halacha, and therefore it's so clear that you cannot put together this maisa that Pinchas did to his Zayda Levi, and certainly you would not want to relate it or connect it to Yaakov, who protested against both Shimon and Levi, and he got angry at their actions against the Bnei Shechem, and he actually cursed them by saying, "Oror, cursed is their anger," and that's why Yaakov and Levi are both not mentioned when we talk about the lineage of Pinchas. Now, we're learning here, therefore, a lot about this whole issue of zealousness. You know, there's no value at all to an act of zealousness that's done sort of as an act of panic, as an act of anything which is not directly within the gambit of either the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu or the words of the Torah. Any type of zealousness that our Chachamim would not be happy about, that wasn't done according to the strict dictates of what Torah allows, according to all its rules and all its details, is not considered to be the will of Hashem. And someone who is a zealot in such a way, even though he claims to be doing it for the honor of Hashem, and the name of Hashem is in his mouth and on his lips, he is going to be punished according to all the severity of the judgment because of what he did. And that, in fact, is we see by Shimon, that since he didn't consult with his father Yaakov, and he didn't listen to his father's advice, so even though he, in his own mind, wasn't doing it with the intention of doing the right thing, and he wanted to take revenge against the desecration of the honor of the family of Yaakov, nevertheless, since He did not consult beforehand with Yaakov. Yaakov was the Gadol HaDor, was the greatest man of his generation. And he did an act of murder, illegitimate murder. Therefore, he was punished according to the... They had the whole book thrown at him according to the very severity of the judgment. In other words, that his son, Shechem ben Kenanis, and 24,000 members of his tribe were killed. In contrast to this, as we see in this week's parasha, Pinchas, who did what he did strictly according to the laws of the Torah, and he acted according to what he had heard from Moshe Rabbeinu, that Aboy El Aram is someone who has a relationship with a non-Jew, Kanoim Poigimboy. People who have a true zealousness for the honor of Hashem are allowed to kill him, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin brings. As it says, Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar, Pinchas saw, Maro, what did he see? Amar Rav Ra said, Ra, Maisa, he saw what was going on, V'niskar halacha, and he remembered what the halacha is. So Pinchas said to Moshe, says, Achi Abba, Abba, says my great uncle, did you not teach us when you came down from Sinai that a boy, if a person is having a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, by zealous people are allowed to kill him? So Moshe said, yes, you're right. But he used the expression, Karaina Dagrasa, the one who read the letter, Ihu Lave Pavanka. He should be the one that carries out what is written in the letter. And only after that HaKadosh Baruch, that Moshe Rabbeinu permitted Pinchas to do what he did and agreed with him, only then did Pinchas go and do his act of zealousness, which was totally and completely for the sake of Hashem. And of course, without going into great detail, obviously today there are similar situations where people think they may be doing something that certainly is the correct action. But unless you've consulted and get the absolute consent of the great Torah leaders of any generation, so then that cannot be considered an act of zealousness for the sake of Hashem, but only something that's going to further your own ambitions, your own beliefs, and is considered to be possible, is considered to be absolutely invalid in the light of the Torah. We'll be back with our Halakha Shabbos slot in a moment. This is 101.9. The program is the late Erev Shabbos afternoon radio show. My name is Rav Moshe Schnurb. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. A warm welcome to those of you who are just joining us at this juncture of the show as we get closer and closer, inching closer every moment to Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Pinchas Tov Shin Pei Vav. Thank you for joining us, for those who have just joined now and those who are carrying on from the earlier parts of the show, as we always do at this juncture of the show, to talk about the important times you need to know for this coming Shabbos. So firstly, the earliest time for lighting the Shabbos candles this afternoon is very, very shortly at 4:22. 4:22 is the earliest time to light your Shabbos candles. And as I always say, it really, really, it's the most wonderful thing. I know we've tried it, we've experienced it. The lighting of Shabbos candles earlier than you need to do. You know, some people, they're just some people that are always just organized, and you know, the kind of people that if they have an assignment to do and it's due on Friday, they'll do it on Monday, the day it's assigned, and you know, get it done, and it's all there and ready, and they don't have to worry about it anymore. And then you have the people that get around Wednesday, and then you have those that sort of wake Friday morning, now I need to do the assignment. So Shabbos is like that, and it shows the chavivus, it shows how precious and how dear Shabbos is to us, that we want to grab it and take hold of it. Yes, it means being a bit organized. Yes, it means perhaps planning ahead of time that you're going to do things not all on Friday. Maybe start a couple of days early and do, you know, something each night or something.
and get yourself to the point where the house is clean and everything is tidy and you're ready and the food is on the hot tray or the platter, wherever it needs to be. And sort of everything is organized and you can kind of just simmer down and kind of float into Shabbos. Get the candles lit. Sit down with a sefer. Sit down with the kids. Sit down with something that's going to make you happy and give you enjoyment and help you really, really kind of ease your way into Shabbos. It's an amazing, amazing thing that we could somehow recapture the way Erev Shabbos is supposed to be. Would be a wonderful, wonderful thing. So anyway, the earliest time is 4:22. If you can't manage then, well, 4:30, a quarter to 5 is also absolutely fantastic. The latest time for benching licht this afternoon is going to be at 10 minutes past 5. 5:10 is the latest. We already gained 5 minutes from the earliest time, and we're slowly, slowly, slowly moving. 10 past 5 is the latest time, and as far as we're concerned, that is the deadline for having Shabbos ready in your home, ready in your life, everything done by then, all the muktzah items, all the things that don't have nothing to do with Shabbos, to be away, to be out of your consciousness, out of your sight, out of your mind, and really kind of accept Shabbos upon yourself. It's a wonderful thing to do. Your person should actually say, Hare ani mekabel olai kedushas haShabbos. I'm accepting upon myself the holiness of Shabbos. Actually, put yourself in that state of mind. Sunset is at 5:28 today, which of course, as we said, that time is there for those who always or who might be in a situation where they need a bit of extra time. There's an emergency. They might otherwise, God forbid, come to actually break Shabbos. So we give them that extra minutes. But as far as we're concerned, 5:10 is the absolute, absolute deadline. Therefore, if Shkia is 5:28, then if you could wait until 5:46 till Davin Ma'ariv, that already is proper night, and you can fulfill the Torah obligation of saying Kriyat Shema at night when it really is night, which of course most shuls or communities where they're only starting to daven at 5:10. Particularly if there's a drasha, we'll certainly get there after 5:46, which is top dog, which means you get that special mitzvah of reciting Kriya Shema at night, and you don't have to worry about saying the whole thing over again later. And then, of course, still very early, we have a wonderful, wonderful long Friday evening, like Leil Shabbos, more correctly, and you can have a wonderful, wonderful suda with your family and friends, with guests, without guests, sort of spend the time together, learn some Torah, say a nice piece on the parsha. Maybe you could reference what we discussed until now, but there's plenty to talk about. So many books on Torah matters, on parsha ideas, and sit with the kids. Don't, and even after the meal is over, don't run to bed. You don't need to sleep. A whole donut, a croissant is definitely enough. Learn some Torah, speak to the kids, make it an incredible family experience. Tomorrow, of course, is Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Pinchas. It's quite a long parsha, lots of details about again the counting of the Jewish nation. First, the reward that Pinchas received for his heroic act, and the counting of the Jewish nation again, and then more about the division of the land of Israel and the special portion that was given to the daughters of Tzlavchad, and Moshe's quest for a new leader who was going to replace him because he knew he was not going into Israel. And then the whole last of the Pasha is the special sacrifices that were brought on all the special days, starting with the Korban Tamid, which was brought every single day, morning and afternoon, and then Shabbos, and Rosh Chodesh, Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and all the days of Sukkot. Lots and lots to get your teeth into. The Haftarah is not the Haftarah of Parshas Pinchas, but because it is the first Shabbos of the 3 weeks, we actually read the Haftarah that's printed in the Chumashim for Parshas Matos, the very, very first chapter of the book of Yirmiyahu, which is what's called the Shalosha de Paranusa, the three Haftaris of this week, next week, and of course Shabbos Chazayin, which talk about some pretty bleak and negative prophecies about the Jewish nation, very appropriate to this time of the year. And then, of course, the Shabbos carries on. And this week we're going to be reading Perek Vav, the sixth chapter of Perkei Avos, the addendum to Perkei Avos. Powerful, powerful Mishnayos about the power of Torah and the way we can acquire Torah. Definitely takes some time to get your teeth stuck into it, to learn a little bit about it. It's wonderful, wonderful material. Shabbos Kodesh ends tomorrow night at 6:02. 6:02 is the end of Shabbos, and we go into another beautiful, beautiful week. Again, we are in the 3 weeks and the restrictions there that are applicable, but still wonderful time to serve our Kodesh Baruch, a wonderful time to be involved in really, really good things. We are changing tack a little bit in our Hilchos Shabbos, and we're talking a little bit about animals and the obligation for rest of animals. And of course, the halacha is that just as a Jew himself is commanded to rest on Shabbos, so too he's commanded to allow his animals to rest. Now, there are sort of two commandments that really address this issue. One is a positive, a mitzvah aseh, as the Torah says in Shemot 23, right? 6 days you shall do your work, but on the seventh day you shall cease, so that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your maidservant and the stranger may be refreshed. And then there's one negative commandment, a loisase, right? As in fact the Torah says in the Aseret HaDibrot in chapter 20, but the seventh day is a Shabbos of Hashem your God, and you shall not do any malacha, not you, your son or daughter, your male or female slave, or your beast, or the stranger who's within your settlements. Now, the mitzvah of allowing animals to rest is not one of the 39 malachas, but a mitzvah in its own right, right? And its violation is not punishable by death or lashes, as the Gemara says in Shabbat 1:154. Now, even though the Torah in those psukim mentions beasts, oxen, and donkeys, obviously that's just an example. The prohibition applies to all animals, including even birds and fish, says the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Shin Hei. Therefore, one may not release even carrier pigeons on Shabbat, and one may not use trained dolphins to sort of pull a boat. The Torah specifies the ox and the donkey because they are the normal beasts of burden that are most sort of commonly used for plowing and carrying heavy kind of loads. We're going to take a break and come back with some final comments. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is the late Shabbos afternoon show. My name is Rav Moshe Schnurb. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. We are talking about resting your animals on Shabbos. What, of course, is an animal carrying a load to move from one place to another on Shabbos, whether by striking, pulling, or ordering it, even with one's voice, transgresses Torah law. This prohibition is referred to as mechamer. Even if the animal belongs to a non-Jew or is ownerless, one may not cause it to walk with a burden. If one causes his own animal to do so, then in addition to transgressing the negative commandment against doing work, he actually also violates the positive commandment of allowing one's animals to work, as the Mishnah Berurah brings down in Siman Resh Samach Vav 266. Now, this positive commandment applies on Yom Kippur as well, and there's a discussion in the Halacha whether it applies also on Shabbat. A Jew may not rent his animal to a non-Jew who will use it to do work like plowing or carrying burdens in the public domain on Shabbos. If a Jew rents out an animal with the understanding that it will be returned before Shabbos, but it's not, so he should declare the animal hefker ownerless before Shabbos to avoid violating Torah law. If a Jew and a non-Jew are co-owners of an animal, the Jew may not permit the non-Jew to work the animal on Shabbos. However, if when they first bought the animal, they specified that the non-Jew would be the sole owner on Shabbat, while the Jew would be the sole owner on maybe a different day of the week, then the non-Jew may work the animal on Shabbos, because on Shabbos, it's now his animal. A Jew may allow a non-Jew to ride his horse or other animal on Shabbos in accordance with the principle that a living being actually carries itself. Right? We say, Chai noisei es atzmai. Therefore, the non-Jew who rides the animal is not actually considered a burden, right? Nor are the sort of clothes he wears, as they are sort of secondary to his body. However, the Chachamim enacted that a Jew may not use an animal at all. He may not lean on it, place an object on it, or sit in a wagon, right, hitched to it, even if a non-Jew is driving the wagon for his own purposes. The reason for this enactment is to avoid burdening the animal on Shabbos. Another reason might be is that while riding an animal, one may come to break off a tree branch in order to sort of goad the animal. And this, of course, transgresses the malacha of koitzer, of cutting things off from its growing source. Well, that's all the time we have today. I just want to wish all of you, thank you for being with us, and wish everyone a beautiful, warm, both in terms of physical and spiritual content. Make an amazing, amazing Shabbos. To each and every one of you, a good Gebench to Shabbos. Shabbat Shalom.